This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Well, it's time to find out what the Seahawks did, or more, how they did in the draft this weekend. Brock, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Frank. Good morning, Justin. Good morning, Western and Eastern Washington, all over the world, wherever you may find us this morning. Monday morning.
Wow, you are in a good mood.
Yeah, so you'd make it the rounds.
I gave one word to describe the Seahawks draft to start the show an hour ago. My word is workmanlike.
Yeah.
It's just a workmanlike draft. It wasn't fancy. It wasn't, you know, littered with super exciting names, and the national pundits aren't going to talk about it a ton. Whenever you see, you know, best and worst, they're probably not going to show up on it because there weren't a lot of sexy picks, no quarterbacks, no wide receivers, no premier left tackles or anything like that. So this was not a draft for them to get that type of player. But they didn't. They just took care of business. They built a core. They drafted a lot of players that should really help them be the type of team they want to be. What did you see?
Yeah, I don't know if I could assign just one word to it, but it felt like they were in the present. They did not sacrifice future. They did not do any crazy trades. They did not pull, you know, to rob Peter, to pay Paul later and sacrifice. Like, no, we are in the present moment, and we're going to get the guys that are going to fit what these coaches want, how we want to build this team, like you said, in that workmanlike kind of fashion at the line of scrimmage with a couple just tremendously physical guys, violent guys. It's crazy that the sixth rounder, and this is just my own bias with Laumea, because I saw him, you know, from his freshman to his sophomore to his junior year and all the growth, and he is just one Breno Giacomini mean sucker. Like, he just is he just wants to finish you like Mortal Kombat. So to me, it just felt like, I wonder if they're going to go up. Okay, I wonder if they're going to go up. I know there were some people they were interested in the second and in the third, and are they going to kind of sacrifice future picks? Are they going to sacrifice from this draft? Mm-hmm. Are they going to limit themselves? And they just had a governor like Echo Falls golf carts have. So you can't go 90 miles an hour down that hill, even if you wanted to. Just a governor to say, nope, take the guy that fits us best in this exact spot. And to me, it felt that way really over the course of all seven rounds.
Are they a better team today than they were on Thursday morning?
Oh, no question. Yeah, no question. That when you add a Byron Murphy right in the middle of your defense, when you add a couple guards right in the middle of your offensive line that you needed, you know, your third rounder in Haynes, that is just a super veteran guy. I mean, he's played so much football. My concern was maybe he was a little bit stiff, kind of went back and watched some of his stuff, and he is more of a mauler than he is a mover. But again, this kind of fits, I think, a lot of what these coaches, what Scott Huff and Ryan Grubb and what they wanted as they communicated with John Schneider throughout the entire process of the last few months. And now that the hay is in the barn, I think I can say that. I think it's fair to say, like, this young staff, as you would imagine, was as plugged in and as engaged with the personnel department and with John as you could possibly be.
So that's the big picture, and I think I'm right there with you. An under-the-radar draft, a workman-like draft, a draft full of players that are going to help sooner rather than later, and guys that should really fit what this new coaching staff is looking for. Let's be a little more specific. Let me run through each of these players and maybe just give me a quick thought on who they are, what you know about them, and what you believe they could add here in Seattle. Obviously, okay, we spent a lot of time on Friday talking about Byron Murphy, but I'll hit it once again just because he's the big name here. Let's start with him, Byron Murphy.
Yeah, just leverage and power, man, when I think of him. And watching all sorts of clips again over the weekend, Mike, there's not many D tackles that do their D line drills at their pro day with their shirt off. There just aren't. Most of them have their shirts on.
For good reason.
Most of them have, like, you had your compression shorts on. They've got compression shirts on to keep all the stuff jiggling and everything just nice and compact and tight. I don't think I've ever seen, honestly, a highlight film of your workout at your facility with your shirt off when you're a defensive lineman. That resonates. Just power, leverage, so just stinking low to the ground and powerful.
All right, third round pick number 81, Christian Haynes, the guard out of UConn. I don't know if that's like a guard factory or anything, but that's where Christian Haynes went.
Played a lot of ball, man. I mean, a lot of football over 6 years. So many veteran guys, Salk, amongst this crew of eight that have put a lot of hay in the barn, have put a lot of effort into their career, have endured quite a bit. Horrible, horrible program at UConn, right? So very hard to gauge, not playing necessarily elite competition, not surrounded by a cast of much talent. And the dude it kind of fits like Murphy, man. The first word that comes to mind is just those heavy hands, the power. You saw the little brawl that he got in at the Senior Bowl, right? He's going to be unafraid.
Ray Roberts story.
That's exactly right. Unafraid to mix it up, and is going to be pretty firm right there in the middle of that offensive line.
All right, now this is the one that maybe there are the most questions about, and that's the first pick in the fourth round, the linebacker Tyrese Knight out of UTEP.
Yeah, don't remember him. I had UTEP a couple years ago at Oklahoma State, and I don't really remember him then. That's not necessarily like a horrible thing. And a lot of the same commentary you could say about UConn.
He's
like as
Mr.
far as
self-made, right? Like, I mean, he was a zero-star recruit, JUCO, yep, et cetera, and then finally, you know, makes himself into the leading tackler.
This has to be one that I think we can all be careful, and John, we trust and everything else. I don't think he likes that. I don't think you should apply that to anywhere. But this would be one. With all the different linebackers that were available, and there were still a bunch of them, and guys from big programs, this would be the one that I would say you got to trust Mike McDonald's eyes. I mean, the guy knows what he wants in his scheme at linebacker, right. And this is just straight tools. This is a 4.6 guy, a 1.59, 10-yard, a really quick, short area kind of burst with a whole bunch of tackles in his career, so a nose for the ball. But a little bit more difficult, again, coming out of UTEP and not playing prominent athletic competition.
Yeah, but is that the Bobby Wagner story a little bit?
I mean, it is. He's nowhere near the frame that obviously Bobby was or has that kind of, he's 6 foot.
And that's why he's a fourth rounder, not a second rounder. But correct. I mean, is there some of that similarity of like, hey, yeah, maybe he wasn't doing it in the most with the most eyeballs on him, but we kind of like what he was doing.
Yes. No, I don't think there's any question about it. They love what he was doing to take him there ahead of a bunch of other known name linebackers.
Here's what he said yesterday about who he is and what he learned about himself.
I just feel like I'm very versatile. I feel like I can play good in the run game, good in the pass game. I'm just an all-around backer, solid on the sideline. I think I could do anything coach asks me to do without any hesitation or right any like downward or anything. So I'm just, you know, I feel like I'm a perfect linebacker for the Seahawks. I'm glad I made this decision.
I'm a little concerned with judgment out the gate. I'm not going to lie. Put yourself in bad cell reception zone on draft day. That's not good. John was not happy about that.
No.
He was trying to track him down. Yeah. So maybe he didn't think he was going to get drafted, you know, in the top half of the fourth round. But, bro, put yourself in some good cell reception.
All right, let me try to run through these a little bit quicker. We did Tyrese Knight. A.J. Barner.
Yeah, now he's the opposite. He's played tight end
out of Michigan.
Yes, yeah, so he's played at Indiana. He played with Michael Penix. I saw him a bunch there. He did catch the ball a little bit more there. He was in space. I love that he went to Michigan, put his hand in the ground, and just got in guys' face. Just a down and dirty and fourth round feels just
about
right.
That's another one where there were some other tight ends available at that time that they could have gone with, so they must have seen something they preferred there.
There's got to be familiarity, right? If a Cade Stover's on the board and I know they liked him out of Ohio State, it's like, no, this guy we know.
Yep.
Right. The staff knows A.J. Barner coming from Michigan.
Must have felt good about that. All right. Then you get the two corners, Nehemiah Pritchett out of Auburn in the fifth and D.J. James out of Auburn in the sixth.
Yeah. Man, press guys. So this scheme is going to want to press. It's why we talked about corners in that first round, Salk. And they want to come up and challenge you. And Pritchett did a ton of that at Auburn. He had the fourth fastest combine time as a 40 guy. So he's got some speed. D.J. James was an interesting cat. He came all the way across the country to play at Oregon, played there and started there for a couple years, started the last few years. So again, a couple veteran guys that have started, I don't know, between the two of them, like 80-some games. They can both run, and they're both going to be just really charged with getting in guys' face and run with them in man.
And then you got two offensive linemen in the sixth round as well. As you mentioned, I know you love him, and just everything I've heard so far, Satoa Lomea may be the guy we'll end up liking the most here. And then Michael Jarrell out of Findlay at the end.
Yeah, Jarrell is just kind of a project. I know nothing about him. I'd be talking totally.
He's a D2 guy.
Yep. I apologize. That's on me. Okay, this is it. And I love what the guys say. I love what Matt Miller says, Daniel Jeremiah, those guys. The fifth, sixth, seventh round, Salk, those are for the scouts. First rounds for the head coach and the coaches and everything else, GM. Second and third, a lot about your assistants. They're all plugged in. You get to the third day, that is about your scouts that say, this guy's got a little something, man. Mm-hmm. Laumea's got just a nasty, nasty streak, and this staff knew him. Grubb and Huff, they played Utah. Like, you get that just hand in the ground, and we're going to maul you, and we're going to fight you, and I'm going to – I don't – right? I mean, look at the success that Utah's group had up front the last few years. He was the centerpiece of it, the most talented of that crew.
So overall, a workmanlike draft, an under-the-radar draft, a draft about the here and now – and a draft where now I think we learn a little bit more about who Mike McDonald is, what John Schneider wants to do, and what the future of this franchise will look like.
I said to you when it was all done, and when they had all their picks, and there ended up eight of them, I want big, strong, physical dudes that love playing football.
Well, they
that love
that.
Mixing it up and have just some violence to their game, and you incorporated a bunch of
six of their eight guys play either on the line of scrimmage or linebacker. So. Mm-hmm. And I love taking cornerbacks where they took cornerbacks. So I love everything they did yesterday. I don't know if any of the players are going to be good. We'll find out. But at the way they thought about the draft, the way they approached the draft, the way they executed on the draft,
constructed,
pretty darn cool. All right, we'll come right back with everything you need to know, including another fourth straight series win for your Mariners. It's Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Didn't quite complete the sweep, but it was a good weekend for the Mariners. They got things done. They've now defeated both of last year's World Series participants in back-to-back series. First it was Texas, then it was Arizona. The recipe, once again, pretty simple. Pitching, pitching, and more pitching. They allowed a total of 5 runs in the series. Unfortunately, 3 of them came yesterday. They only scored a couple, and so they end up losing that game. But Emerson Hancock was very solid on Friday. Ton of ground ball outs and double play. George Kirby was absurd on Saturday. That was as good as I've ever seen him. His fastball was out of control. It was unreal.
Did he have an extra day or two of rest? Is it kind of moved around?
Maybe
with the rain,
one.
With the rain out and the day off?
Maybe one. I'd have to go back and check. Okay. I'm not sure. But the fastball was absurd, and Scott talked about it afterwards.
Yeah, like I said, 23 swings and misses on the fastball tonight. That's electric stuff. You just don't see that in this league, especially with the velocity nowadays and the way guys train. They're ready for velo. They know what George Kirby's going to go out and do against him. And still to get it done like that, very impressive.
It really was. And you could tell right from the jump that that's how he was going to be. And then Logan was actually pretty dominant yesterday. He allowed the home run and one other run in his 6 and a third. But they just didn't score for him yesterday. And unfortunately, an offense that has not been that bad recently just looked lifeless yesterday, and especially at the end of the game, just seemed to be kind of unable to generate much.
Yeah, just a lot of strikeouts. What was it, 15 strikeouts and no walks yesterday?
Gotta have walks.
Yeah, you gotta find a way to get some traction.
Take those 15 strikeouts as long as you take 4 or 5 walks and hit a home run or two. They didn't do that.
So many historic numbers over the weekend with their pitching. I mean, just going back a long way, like to the start of the stat of ERA in some categories for these starting pitchers. But this was to that point about fastball. This is Codify Baseball on Twitter. The last 3 Major League Baseball pitchers to get 18-plus whiffs in one game with their 4-seam fastball. Luis Castillo last June, Bryce Miller last June, George Kirby Saturday night. Not the last 3 Mariners, mind you. That is the last 3 Major League Baseball
pitchers. That's pretty amazing. That's been impressive. Road's not going to get easier. The best team in the game right now is Atlanta. They'll be here for 3. Jared Kelnick will be in town, which is kind of fun. Miller, Hancock, Castillo in line for the 3 starts.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
The Seahawks had needs in the draft, and then they went out and filled them, which was great. They took what they deemed to be the best defensive player on Thursday in the whole draft, and then 3 offensive linemen, 2 corners, a linebacker, and a tight end after that. 6 of the 8 picks will either play on the line of scrimmage or right near the ball. The 2 corners were taken much later, 5th and 6th rounds, so not a single complaint from me, I'll tell you that much. Who are the 2 guards? Let's start with Christian Haynes out of UConn, their 3rd round pick.
Initial quickness, length, he can get under people, he can roll his hips. Like the pass protection stuff is legit. I mean, lateral movement, stays in front of people, he's got strong hands. He's got anchor, he's just a really good football player, really good, so experienced, he knows like the nuances, and he had a great Zoom interview with Coach Huff. They love the football intelligence, so everybody was just really excited.
He had a great Senior Bowl week as well, and the first couple grades, Salk, those were ones at the Seahawks Twitter. Those are the ones at the Seahawks Draft Knicks. All really like the guys and gals who do all of the fantasy drafts and try to plug and play, and where can I find the most value? And I think you found really good value with both of those guys. I think some would then say, you know, did you reach a little bit for need? I don't know. I mean, Tyrese Knight, they had multiple linebackers they could have taken. He's the one that they wanted. He was not the name. The name might have been out of Texas. The name might have been out of North Carolina. The bigger names might have been Jeremiah from elsewhere. Trotter. Yeah, but he was the one that had kind of the stuff and the clay to mold to fit into their scheme. And these linebackers are going to be asked to cover in ways. It will be the most stark difference of anything over the last 14 years is what these linebackers in coverage are asked to do. And you need somebody with some speed in sideline to sideline, and he's got plenty of that.
Well, as I said, we don't know whether these guys are necessarily going to be good, but I do like the thought process around each one of the picks. I like the direction that they're going, and certainly the commitment to moving people up front. Got to appreciate that as well.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Updates here. Good news on Brian Wu. His second start was nasty once again. Got up to 49 pitches in the minor leagues. Next time it'll be 85, and then we'll take it from there. But no rush, obviously, with their rotation continuing to dominate on a nightly basis. For Matt Brash, though, shut down indefinitely. Doesn't sound good at all. Don't like the way this is trending. The Mariners don't seem to like the way it sounds either. I know the bullpen's been a huge strength of theirs so far, but they'll miss him. In fact, I could argue they already do, and maybe that game does go differently yesterday if you have Brash in there instead of Thornton. Not that Trent's had a bad start at all. He's been tremendous, but, you know, Matt Brash has different kind of stuff, and they're missing him yesterday.
Yeah, and Santos is still... That doesn't seem like that's right around the corner.
No, that's going to be June 1st at a minimum. So, I mean, not great news there. Seahawks bring in Rashad Penny for a visit, as we said last week, Brock. And John Schneider said he might actually be a little fit here.
Yeah, you know, I kind of like, too. I was curious. 10 Huskies get drafted. 3 Cougs get drafted. The Pac-12 second most picks of any conference behind only the SEC. So the Pac-12 goes out and... glory, once again. How many times have we said that over this last calendar year about the Conference of Champions? But Jack Westover, the tight end, did not ended up getting drafted. I thought he would. I thought he'd be the 11th Husky. Instead, he'll sign as an undrafted rookie free agent here in Seattle, and what a great opportunity for him.
Yeah, there were 4 Huskies who signed free agent deals in addition to the 10 who got drafted. Everyone but ZTF.
Yeah, something's going on there. I don't know what that is with ZTF, because he was supposed to be at the combine, didn't really participate there, didn't really see him at much of the pro day stuff. So obviously lost his father during the course of the season, a body that just never really responded after the Achilles, frankly. You know, and he was pretty vulnerable late in the season with us of just not being able to put the weight and the strength and the power back on. And
what a bummer.
What a bummer from where he was certainly in 2020.
All right, there you go. That is everything you need to know quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. All right, so I want to get into some Mariners. We'll do that at 8 o'clock because I want to talk about what this pitching staff is up to and just how ridiculous it is, and maybe some big picture stuff on kind of where they're at now a month or so into the season. Before we do it, though, Brock, I got rapid fire for you. I got a bunch of rapid fire draft questions.
So I
got to
be up tempo. Do I got it? I can't think about these.
I don't. You have to be like crazy up tempo. I mean, it's.
I mean, the last time we did rapid fire, it was a rapid disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, even G Sky was making fun of me.
If it's called rapid fire, let's make it rapid.
I got like 10 questions for 15 minutes, so you got to go like a minute and a half with each of these questions.
Oh boy.
We'll do it next. You're gonna learn something about these draft picks from Brock coming up on Brock and Salk Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, we'll do some rapid-fire draft questions, Seahawks draft questions for you, Brock. Mariner talk at 8 o'clock. Brady Henderson joins us at 8:30 this morning here on Seattle Sports on 710. Let's do this. I've just got a bunch of questions for you that I was thinking about last night. Give you like a minute or so for each of them. Brock, let's just start very simply. Your favorite overall pick from this draft?
My favorite overall pick is it's the 6th-rounder, Laimea. I mean, Murphy is right there. We spent a ton of time. He's going to be the most impactful. There's no question about it. But my favorite overall pick, like when it hit the board, I'm like, Oh, that's right. I should have previewed that freaking guy. I liked him. I liked him a lot. I loved him as a guard at Utah. And they slid him out, Salk, this last year to play tackle. And he got exposed a little bit.
He's not a tackle.
He's not a tackle from just a movement, a lateral movement, and everything else. He's a guard. And he's a tall guard. He's kind of a little bit unconventional guard. Where Haynes is, you know, we've looked at these different guys through the years. Phil Haynes and Christian Haynes and Damian Lewis. Lower, squattier. He is longer. He looks like a tackle, so I can see why they tried to play him there. But the dude is a guard, and he's been an all-conference performer year after year after year. And as I said to you at the start of the show, if there's somebody that's got this Breno Giacomini switch that is just angry and violent, that dude had that at Utah.
Yeah, I love – I have some sound from Schneider that I can play, but I also have some sound from him. So they were asking him, Brock, my favorite question. What's your favorite thing to do on a football field? And his answer was a whole lot better than our buddies years ago. Here's what Sautoa Lemea said.
I'll probably say moving a person from point A to point B is the most fun part. That's what I mean by physicality. Because we got to move grown men, and they're not going to let us. So I feel like I don't care, and I'm willing to do my job. So I want to do my job. And you said about finishing. I do finish. I need to be better with being more consistent with that. But that's what I want to show in Seattle. So, I would say I am a pretty physical in that way. Trying to move people off the ball and trying to finish them.
Just moving people from point A to point B.
Yeah, I wish I had the clip. I went back on my text to try to find it because I know in my Utah prep this year, I put together videos for Benetti and those and Bo and Allison of look at this guy. Look at this guy. We got to have our camera on this guy because through the whistle to the whistle, he loves putting people to the ground. So, yeah, cool. I would say value-wise, right. Too, in the sixth round, my favorite.
Who was your favorite pick in the third and fourth round, sort of the, you know, the mid-rounds?
Yeah, I'd say the tight end Barner. You know, they had their pick of tight ends. They had their pick of linebackers. And seeing AJ a little bit like Penix just grow and develop over time. And Penix left Indiana to go to Washington to rebuild himself. AJ went to a tight end factory in Michigan where the tight ends were prominent, where 12 personnel was the primary personnel grouping for them. And maybe not like the most hyper athletic guy, but just a do good in all these different areas. Check that box, check that box, check that box. And that one, I figured that they would have a Michigan guy when it was all said and done out of their 8 picks. He ended up being the Michigan guy, albeit a transfer from Indiana, but one with a whole bunch of familiarity with the staff.
I thought it would be a Michigan defensive player, not a tight end, but hey, that's the direction they go. This one, I mean, you've already sort of answered, obviously, with LaMea, so I'll ask for another. Favorite pick from the fifth and sixth rounds, their later round picks.
Yeah, this DJ James. And listening to his interview was pretty fun, man. He's got a little corner spunk to him. He's only about 175 pounds, but when they made the call to him, I liked the back and forth that he had with Carl Scott, the DB coach, because he said to coach, he said, man, you got a dog. And the coach said, well, you know what they like to say? I'd rather see it than hear it. And he's like, you're going to see it. So right away, a little back and forth. And, you know, he's an Auburn guy. Carl spent some years at Alabama. But, yeah, he's going to be one that comes in with a huge chip on his shoulder. Lance Zierlein, by the way, going back and looking at his draft profiles and all the work that they do on those later picks, he had both these corners as fourth-round guys. So the fact that they get him in the sixth round with a ton of experience, just a little slender frame, just a little bit of a question whether he's an outside guy or a nickel, and that's why he's available there in the sixth round.
Yeah, both ESPN and Dane Brugler had him ahead of the other
Pritchett.
One, of Pritchett. So for whatever that's worth, both guys, both groups had him as an even better corner. All right, who will be the immediate contributors from this draft?
Yeah, Murphy and Haynes are going to come in and be able to carve out opportunity right away, especially Haynes. Now, we'll see what they do, whether he moves over to the left guard spot, because I think he was primarily all right guard there at UConn. Lakin Tomlinson, I think, has maybe done a little bit of both. So what is that going to look like? How are they going to figure that thing out? But he's going to come in right away and have a massive, massive opportunity to be a starter.
Okay. Let's see. Who has the long-term upside that maybe won't start right away, but over time you could see them really turning into something?
Well, that would have to be, and you would sure hope it would be, the linebacker night, right? You've got two veteran guys that are going to be your starters day number one, both on short-term, one-year contracts. And, you know, not too dissimilar to his story, right? Being a fourth-round pick, those guys guys were not top picks. In fact, Dotson was an undrafted rookie free agent that had to make his way in Buffalo and really kind of build his resume up. So over the long term, you would love to see, man, if this guy can learn from two veterans and know how to play the game and really does have a skill set, Salk, that can run and search and cover and do those things that McDonald and the system want him to do. You know, that would have been the spot, by the way, that might maybe some thought, well, Michael Barrett, the kid out of Michigan, the other linebacker opposite Junior Colson. Barrett doesn't go till the seventh round. It's probably injury-related more than anything else. But, you know, that could have been the spot. You took a Michigan linebacker, took him in the sixth round. They did not. And, again, I think that's because that skill set is one that they want to work with.
Who had the best value?
Oh, that's LaMea. Yeah, and John said that afterwards. You know, like, gosh, I think you kind of look up at your board and like, huh, man, that guy is still sitting there in the sixth round. And I think, honestly, he's there. He'd been a guard his entire career. They never screwed around and bumped him out to tackle. And they had some depth issues at tackle at Utah and some guys that were capable, powerful guys to play guard. But had he just stayed at guard and been all conference every year, maybe not had some of that exposure at tackle, there's no way he's sitting there in the sixth round.
Yeah, here's what John said about him.
What do we like about him? He's huge. He's tough. Really aggressive. Again, you guys hear this all the time. But like, boy, I can't believe he was still available. Like, that was one of those guys. Like, okay, you're waiting. And it's like, keeps coming. And, you know, he's been primarily a right side player. He's played right guard, right tackle. But size, length, you know. Again, another dude that had a really nice Senior Bowl week. And competed at a high level. So, and Dave said he had a really fun press conference with you guys. So, it's great.
You know what you're getting when you're getting a Utah guy. I mean, you just do, especially at the line of scrimmage, right? And their O-line coach there, Mike, at Utah, has been there a long time. It is familial. It is a lot of Polynesian community, right, where they care for one another, where there is a selflessness. And, you know, they don't bring transfers into their O-line. They bring them into the other positions. But that O-line group there at Utah is a really fully mature, bloomed, established crew. And with it, you get a lot of physicality because they're in pads a lot. But you kind of also get just a selfless understanding that I want to fit into this group and into the makeup of this group. And I think he'll be a pretty cool piece to watch.
Who is the pick that will benefit the most from this coaching staff?
I think that should be your number one pick. I think that should be Byron Murphy. And that's not a slight at Texas. And obviously, he looked at their guys, and big old Tavondre went right there, Salk, in the second round.
I wondered if
he'd be there in the third or fourth or anything else.
No, but Tennessee got after it early.
Yes, they did. But I think just from not only just the coaching staff, I'm going to throw Leonard and Jaron in there as well. And heck, Dre. I mean, just experienced dudes around you that know how to play the game and know how to take all of that horsepower that he's going to bring, right? Not too different than our Mariners and our pitching staff, and really kind of honing it and sharpening it and maximizing it and what they're going to ask these D linemen to do and the technique they're going to be taught and that whole entire front, Salk. You know, I expect some big steps there from this defense to no longer be 32nd ranked and 31st ranked when it comes to rushing yards per game or rushing yards per carry or just some of the dismal places they've been in the run game. So I'd say because of coaching staff and the people around him, Murphy's got a chance to take that kind of stuff.
Who's your best bet to get a second contract?
Yeah, probably one of those first two guys. You know, typically those guys in the first, you know, three rounds over time statistically will tell you they've kind of got a talent level that's unique. And yeah, I think a Byron Murphy, you know, would be the easy answer there.
It's funny. I think, for whatever reason, the Seahawks have not given a lot of their first pick second contracts.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of played out a little bit that way, huh? A lot of those guys in the 20s, they've traded away a lot of their first round picks. Mm-hmm. I mean, Christian Haynes has just been a durable, tough dude. And wouldn't it be nice? I mean, that you said workmanlike, you know, it's kind of your word to describe all of this. And I don't know what the text toy is, what they've kind of, you know, entered and thought, but they just didn't really screw around. Like, we need to fix this run game. Okay, there's the best guy to do that. All right, we need to solidify this offensive line. We need to find guys that know how to play guard. My buddy Roger emailed me, as you would imagine, over the weekend with this whole draft stuff. I said, there you go, Roger. You just want a guard. You're not playing around. You're not taking a D tackle. You're not taking a tackle. You're taking a guy that for 6 years there has just grinded at UConn and played a ton of games. And then when he got matched up in the Senior Bowl and matched up in these opportunities, showed like, yeah, I'm a guard. And I know how to play guard. And give me that chance to do it for you here in Seattle. So probably one of those two guys.
Undrafted free agent that caught your eye here in Seattle?
Yeah, I think that's just going to be Westover. Yeah. And again, because of the familiarity with Grubb, because Grubb thinks so highly of him and believes in him, I am sure that they were sitting there in that seventh round going, please, you know, probably even reached out to him like, hey, man, have you heard from people? Have you heard from people? Because we'd sure love to have you here. You know, so just as a pass catcher, he's an unbelievably natural pass catcher. He's going to be a better pass catcher than Farrell Brown. AJ's good at it, but I think his skill set and his hands are even better than that. So, you know, you're giving him an opportunity with Noah Fant to maybe be that real pass catcher. And they've kept tight ends, kept 4+ tight ends around here. Mm-hmm. So I would think Westover went to the exact right fit with background, people that believe in him, and what a cool opportunity just to go down the road.
All right. Love it. So good rapid fire.
Did I knock them all out?
I think you did. What? Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, we even played some clips, some other sound.
All right, let me give you, I'll give you one other question. Sheesh. Guy that the Seahawks could have taken that they didn't. Guy that you were looking at any point in the draft and you were like, okay, here's your chance to go grab such and such, and it never materialized.
Yeah, and these are some of my draft profiles, right, and some of the guys that I just kind of get close to and I get around. I'm going to answer some of this in Blue 88, but I'll give you one of my four names, and that would have been Sione Vaque, who ends up going to Detroit, which is a perfect fit for him. Just hard hat, physical.
He's the safety from Utah?
He's the safety from Utah, the other safety, by the way.
See, you don't think I listen to you, but I really do.
Did you see how high the other safety from Utah went? Cole Bishop? Second round.
Yeah.
Like way up there in the second round. I mean, a guy that just totally kind of exploded on the scene through this process and everything else. But yeah, when we were sitting there in the fifth round, I'm thinking, gosh, I kind of like that Vaki guy. He's still kind of sitting there, kind of like his versatility. Hell, he could be your fourth running back as well. You know, like he could be your running back. He could be your safety. He could be your special teamer. He's just a run and hit guy. But he ended up in Detroit in a place probably perfectly suited for just kind of his nature as well.
Brock, I got one for you then. What'd you make of the work shirts?
Those have been around, right? I mean, they've worn those. Yes. Yeah, no, okay. I don't think Pete wore it. Okay. I think that's what was different. The last 3 years, Schneider's been putting on that gas station shirt, and it kind of made some waves. I guess it was maybe the combo with Mike McDonald.
Right.
Because Pete wouldn't do that. No. I mean, Pete's got to wear his.
Pete's like, know. I look good already. I don't need to put on a
Lulu guy.
Yeah, come on.
Why am I going to screw around with
some breaking news that I don't know if you're going to like, unfortunately. This came out this morning. Our guy, Andrew Marchand from The Athletic, media reporter. Matt Ryan is in on CBS's NFL Today. So Matt Ryan is going to be part of the pre-post coverage for the CBS studio show for the NFL. Who's Phil that? Sims and Boomer Esiason are both out.
Whoa.
Kind of crazy.
Ooh.
I like Matt Ryan.
I do too.
I like Boomer.
I like Phil. A lot. So, all right, there you go. There's a little breaking news in the sports media world. I say that I like him, by the way. I never watch that show, ever. There's nothing you could do. There's no one you could put on that show that would get me to watch it. I don't really like watching those pre- and post-game shows anyway, and I almost never would tune into CBS, given that they're mostly talking AFC. So I don't care who you put on that show. I'm still not going to watch it, but I'm color me annoyed anyway, just because I like and root
for
Phil.
You know
Phil
why
Sims.
As well? Because you're a day older now. Yeah. Yesterday, you know? You get older, you start to realize, golly, these young bucks just want to replace me.
Yuck, he said he skipped middle age.
Yeah, I went right to elderly. That was the problem with this hamstring injury.
45?
Yeah, 46. Yeah, 46.
What?
Yeah, it was 45 last year. I've already been 45. Now I'm 46.
Some friends.
Yeah, I went right to elderly,
Oh, you
unfortunately.
Are definitely.
By the way, anybody who's ever pulled their hamstring like this, anybody who's ever popped a hammy, turns out there are only really, it's really not that bad. There are three things that are hard. Walking upstairs, but you can kind of do it one at a time. Putting on your left shoe or sock, very challenging balance-wise to try to get to that position and bend your knee appropriately. And using the bathroom.
Yes.
Sitting. Because of the way that seat hits right in the middle of the hamstring, those three things challenging, everything else not a problem. Let's ask Brock more football questions.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
All right, three good football questions, Brock. Let's stick with the Husky theme of the 10 drafted Huskies, plus the four others who went somewhere as undrafted free agents. Who landed in the best spot?
Yeah, I think a couple of those guys in the second and third round. Obviously, Penix situation still remains just a huge national story and just a disaster and a mess down there in Atlanta. I would say Braylon Trice, number one, going to Atlanta. A lot of people remember, as you look through the mock draft season at number eight, it was always Dallas Turner, right? Maybe one of the other edge guys, maybe Verse, maybe one. And they just did not do that. And the fact that Braylon Trice is going to just have so much opportunity with Raheem Morris, just kind of a West Coast guy, with Jimmy Lake, the defensive coordinator, who knows Braylon, you get to play in a dome on a fast track with noise. Like, yeah, that was a great fit for Braylon, and pretty cool that he and Penix will hook up again. And then I shot a text to Roger Rosengarten. I don't know if you want me to give Jane Rogers' number.
Well,
Jane,
I don't think you should do it. I would say no for Roger's sake.
Okay, all right.
I don't think Roger wants that.
Well, I could give that
my mom and stalk him.
I could give that number to your mom, and your mom's happy. Should be happy up there in the Northeast. Maybe she can go travel and watch him play because he ended up in Baltimore, which is just going to be an awesome, awesome fit. If there was any reason why he fell to the late second round, it was probably the Michigan game. Right, the one game where he got stung a little bit, he got exposed a little bit. But as far as also a guy that will get after it in the run game, that can really move, a tremendous quality organization where the line of scrimmage matters. That's what I texted him, said, proud of you, man. Really happy. Maybe you wanted to go a little bit earlier, but you went to the right fit, the right place. So those two in particular, I think, landed some great spots.
All right, question number two. What's Caleb Williams going to be like as an NFL player? I mean, he seems just very...
Did you listen to their call?
Different. Yeah.
Yeah, so we got into it a little bit. It's a good Gen Z conversation, and Bump was trying to help the old man Muppets on draft night understand, like, Gen Z operates different. Bob and Dave, like, they don't just go by the rules to go by the rules. They make sometimes their own rules. And I will say this, man, I think he is going to push the envelope. You saw this a little bit with their previous quarterback. Remember Justin Fields throwing his coordinator under the bus? Like, there is going to be with Caleb this, like, if this doesn't work, it's not my fault. It's your fault. Mm. And he's going to bring more of that than I think any quarterback ever has to the NFL. And just listening to him on the phone call with the GM, when the GM called him, he's like, yeah, we got to wait 5 minutes. He's like, you mean 5 months? Like, oh, okay. And then the head coach gets on. It was almost just like, yeah, whatever, whatever. You know, I'm in charge. It's like, I'm going to be the face of this thing. I'm the franchise. Kind of some of this NBA empowerment. Like,
don't you kind of like some of that?
There's some of it I do like. There certainly is some of that headstrong, self-belief, confidence, all of it. But you know, and I know what happens to guys like this over the years in the league, right? When Johnny Manziel came in with some of that bravado, when Baker Mayfield came in with some of that, like, this game is going to humble you. You are going to fail. You are not going to be so much better than everybody else. And oh, by the way, with these hash marks, the game is different. This is not like NBA guys, Saul, or soccer players or baseball players. The transition to the pro league, and it's the exact same dimensions. It's not. It's a different game. There is less space for you to run around and create and do all these things that you could do with the wide open hash marks and the wide open field in the college game. You're going to much tighter quarters. You're going to be humbled. How he handles that adversity, I will be plugged in and can't wait to watch.
All right, question number three. You started to answer this earlier, but we'll go into some greater depth. Yeah. Other players that maybe, or other directions they could have gone.
You know, last night I went back and looked at those third, fourth, fifth rounds, and there really was a ledge. You know, I looked at that kind of fifth round and on. I'm like, man, there's not many names on here where I'm like, oh, I really would have loved to seen that. Many of these guys I profiled, saw from, you know, the little fullback out tight end out of Kansas State that went in the second round. Cole Bishop went second round. I thought maybe they'd be fourth rounders. They all got bumped up to that second round. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you a handful of names. Cooper Beebe was a guy from Kansas State that I profiled that I would have loved to have seen. Cooper Beebe or Christian Ains, I'd have taken Cooper Beebe. But the doggone Dallas Cowboys, about eight picks before. And when he went all the way through the second, I'm like, oh, man, he is still there in the third round. And the Seahawks tried. They tried to trade up and go get him, I think, in particular. But that didn't happen. He'd have been a guy I'd been interested in. Zach Zinter. He went a few picks right after Christian Haynes. I know that you had just kind of the natural tie in there and everything else. And I too thought maybe he'd be a fourth round guy. He bumped up there just a few picks after Christian Haynes. And I think that had a little more to do with the pass protection. Zinter, maybe a better run blocker than Haynes, not the pass protector that Haynes was over the course of their career. And then Brandon Jackson, who ended up going the mid fifth round to LA. I think you asked me multiple times, and we will continue to talk about this. What did we learn from this draft? We learned that they feel better about their edge than maybe others do. And the way they're going to work with Boye and work with Derek Hall and work with Daryl Taylor and obviously have a new Chenna back, that there just wasn't room need-wise on their roster for another edge player, and instead they go those two corners, both who happen to be from War Eagle.
All right, there we go. That is today's version of Blue 88. What's nice is there's no real head scratcher here.
Nope.
There's no one pick where you're like, really? I mean, the closest you have to that are either
Knight.
Right, Knight, because there were other linebackers rated ahead of him. But certainly nobody has a problem with them going and drafting a middle linebacker in the fourth round. Nope. It was something they needed. And if they like something about him over the other guys at that place in the draft, it's not like in the first round where you're like, oh, come on, just take the obvious pick. Like, no, it's a fourth round. Like, they're all kind of flyers at that point. And there's something about this kid you like. Cool. I got no problems with that from a logic standpoint. And then maybe you liked a different tight end. Then Barner, maybe like the kid from Ohio State. Okay, fine. But again, those are just like, those are personal preferences.
Correct.
As opposed to
foundational pieces.
Yeah, and drafting guys where they should be drafted. Mm-hmm. I feel like they did a really excellent job of
this
that.
This should have fit your construction eye.
It did.
When you just talk about roster construction and be who you say you want to be. Right. Don't go outside of who you say you want to be. If you say you want to be about big people, if you say you want to be about chasing edges, if you say you want to be about knockback and hitting dudes in the face,
then you're going to be about it.
Then you know what? Don't just talk about it. Be about it. And this draft is full of a bunch of them cats.
Love it. Okay. Brady Henderson's going to join us for a whole lot more on this draft coming up in a half hour at 8:30. Before we get there, though, we are watching history and we're barely even fazed by it. We'll explain why next on Brock and Salk.